A very warm welcome to everybody. Good morning. This is another session of Dharma in Pyjamas. So I hope you're in your pyjamas and ready to go. So we have a different topic each week. And this week, the topic's roughly called Where the Wild Things Are. So I don't know if you ever read that book when you were little, Where the Wild Things Are with Max. I've got a little picture to show you just to jolt your memory. There we go. Here's the wild things with the wild rumpus and Max there. I remember my mother reading this to me, let the wild rumpus begin. So, you know, Max, he goes to sleep at night and his whole room transforms into a jungle. And so the wild things are a little bit like our protectors, our inner protectors. So I wanted to actually talk today about the Dharma protectors and who are the protectors. And we'll kind of venture a little bit into kind of wrathful teachings as well, because they all kind of join up together. So when I was little, because I was brought up a Buddhist, I remember going up to Chenrezig Institute. It was before they even had electricity in the Gompa, and there'd be pujas late at night, and so there'd be candles and there'd be music and drums and the Tibetan trumpets and the conch shells and chanting, and it was just so incredibly exciting as a child. Like, you know, nothing's ever beat it really since then. And so some of those pujas were protector prayer pujas. So really quite fearsome, and the imagery quite fearsome as well. But the fearsomeness was a lot like when you were little and you had stories like that where you were just deliciously scared, so that you felt kind of scared and at the same time completely protected. That deliciousness of listening to a ghost story whilst you're all huddled up together. That kind of thing. So in Tibetan Buddhism, or in Buddhism, the Dharma protectors are, they look really fearsome, but they're actually bodhisattvas who appear in terrifying form, Buddhas who appear in terrifying form. Why are they terrifying? Probably the better way to put it is, who is being terrified? So when we see these protectors, who's being terrified is our self-cherishing and our self-grasping. That's who's scared. They need an equal and opposite reactive force, because they're so large and domineering in our life. The protectors need to be equally strong and equally terrifying, more so to them. So that's how come they look so fearsome. So that's one thing to remember. And the other thing that when we experience it, of course, is this absolute deliciousness of being safe, because now finally we're safe from self-cherishing and self-grasping. So in all the pantheon of the imagery of the Dharma protectors, there's a whole range. So not all protectors in that kind of pantheon are Buddhas. So we have to make sure that when we are seeking the help of the protectors, that we actually seek the help of a Dharma protector. And so, again, there's a whole range of different types of protectors. So Dharmapala, Dharma and protection. And we have to make sure that the ones who are the Buddhas and the Bodhisattvas appearing in this wrathful form, they can go into the merit field. Then there's all these kind of lesser ones that are in the entourage, and they're not necessarily enlightened. So they don't go into the merit field. They don't become objects of refuge for us. It's just a way of being able to kind of discriminate of where we put our trust, where we seek guidance and protection. And what we want to do is be able to feel safe on all levels and live harmoniously on on all levels. So we have the you know, the ultimate one of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, our guru as the protector. All the Buddha's teachings, the Buddha as the protector. And then we have, say, for instance, the main Dharma protectors, like, say, Mahakala, who is the wrathful emanation of Chenrezig, great compassion. And then we also have, they're not so much protectors, but they're like the very strong spirits, or what are called like landlords, that live around us, that protect precious parts of the earth. And so if you've ever gone anywhere in Australia, it's really good to try and have like a welcome to country ceremony, so that you are introduced to everybody that's there, and you are, you know, you arrive harmoniously and invited, and then you are protected when you go through that land. Now, I think I've got a couple of other pictures to show you of the protectors. So, yes, so my first kind of introduction to the protectors was one side, the pujas at Chenrezig Institute with the incredible Dharma protectors, and the other, this fantastic book that is still a great love of my life. I had a great big crush on this one with the stripy jumper. I just thought he was the most gorgeous, fantastic, wonderful creature in the whole world. So I'm going to come back to this story, because there is a real kind of hero's journey within this that all of us go through in our Dharma practice. Now, here's another protector that Geshe Zopa mentioned on the Sunday night teachings, you know, on thought transformation, when he was talking about the four Kadam deities, the four kind of statues that you need on your altar, Shakyamuni Buddha, Tara, Chenrezig, and Miyowa, who's a great wisdom king and immovable protector. So he's depicted as sitting on a rock, immovable, meaning that in our Dharma practice, we are immovable no matter what. And in our bodhicitta, our altruistic intention to an enlightenment for the benefit of sentient beings, we are immovable. And then all the implements have different meanings as well. So the sword of wisdom that cuts through ignorance. And then in his other hand, the hook. So what that, and the rope. And so the rope is of the five colors of the five wisdoms. And what the rope does is it binds all of the crazy energy, the disturbers, the obscurations, how we might personify, you know, all the various demons, those inner demons that we have, doubts and procrastination and all of those things. It binds them. It binds that energy to the Dharma. And Miyowa is surrounded by a flame. And what that flame actually is a Garuda or a phoenix. So really quite amazing imagery. Anyway, when I went online to find some images of Miyowa, because I hadn't heard of this protector until Geshe Zopa talked about it in the beginning of the Thought Transformation teachings, this is what I found: an action figure of a Dharma protector. Isn't that amazing? So it kind of gives you an idea. You know, it's not just a photo. It's not a static thing. But with this action figure, you get the idea of how wonderful it is to have protection. And that protection is there working for us, helping us. So the two teeth, also one up and one down, represents ultimate truth and relative truth. So is it really rich in imagery? Another depiction there. And then here, Mahakala. So this is the puja that I was telling you about up at Chenrezig Institute, the Mahakala puja, you know, the wrathful manifestation of great compassion. So it's hard when you look at this, you go, how on earth can that be compassionate? But it's when we are so tight and so angry, or when we're a bully, Or when we're really grasping and terrified, we need something bigger, stronger, to counter that force and to protect us. So let's see. In the puja was fantastic too, because the imagery, you know, Mahakala and this flames, like the flames at the end of a world eon, stomping with the sound of the drum and the sound of the chains and the clanking. Oh, it was fantastic. So, yes, you can tell it really thrilled me. So who are the protectors? There's whole different levels. On one level, there are legends. And many of the legends, like Mahakala or Paldun Lamo, are really quite gruesome, of beings, really powerful beings that created a whole lot of destruction, but then were bound to the Dharma by the Buddha, bound to protect the Dharma by the Buddha. So that's kind of like the legend, and you can take it literally, or you can take it as a fairy tale. But as we know, fairy tales are really enduring because there is an inner shape to them that really resonates with us. So psychologically, the Dharma protectors are a way of binding the strength of our emotions to our Dharma practice. And what are they bound by? By wisdom and bodhicitta. So it's in our Dharma journey towards enlightenment, all of these incredibly strong emotions and fears that arise, there's energy in them. You know, it's like Johnny Rotten said, you know, anger is an energy. So instead of just trying to put a lid on it, we can actually use that energy. We can harness that power to propel our Dharma practice, to protect us, which I think is incredibly lucky that we can do that. You know, socially we need protectors. We need benefactors. We need to be able to feel safe so that we can progress. Ultimately, of course, the protector is the three jewels, Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. In our own mind, all those realizations in our own mind. So let me read you a little bit now. So this is from Alexander Berzin, Study Buddhism, a fantastic website. So Lama Tsongkhapa, who taught the three principal aspects of the path, renunciation, bodhicitta, and the understanding of emptiness. So in order to transform ourselves, this is what Alexander Berzin says, we need to renounce or be willing to give up our old neurotic ways, which include our negative self-image and other self-destructive states of mind and behavior. Giving this up can actually be quite frightening, and so it requires some sort of feeling of protection. Bodhicitta is the mind wishing to become enlightened for the benefit of others, which means not just working for our own selfish aims, but taking on and working with the problems of every other being. And this, again, can be quite a frightening idea. And finally, with the understanding of emptiness, we're giving up our usual confused projections of the world, where we believe that all of the fantasies surrounding us are real. And giving up these fantasies and dealing with reality can also be a frightening process in which we might feel better if we felt protected and safe. So the protectors, having a protector practice, provides a safe environment in which we can work on a very intimate level of self-transformation. Why do we need this? Well, for instance, if we go see a psychiatrist, we feel much safer knowing that it's going to be private, that nobody's going to interrupt us, and that what we say will stay within that circle of the office. It allows us to be more relaxed and to open up. And that's the whole point of the protection practices. Then he also says, it's possible to give a Jungian analysis to this process and understand that we're actually working with the negative forces within our own unconscious mind that can be tamed and used as protectors. This fits in with the Dharma, that ultimately the source of protection is the natural purity of the clear light mind. So this is linked to a very important psychological point in that these harmful spirits or the protectors represent our fears. And if we have the strength of mind, we can tame these fears and turn them into protectors for us. This is relevant because in Buddhism, we say that ultimately protection comes from within ourselves. And in a sense, it's our own fears that we need to tame in order to feel safe and protected. Okay, so sorry, I'll put the Alex Berzin. And it's the website's called Study Buddhism. It's there on our links page. Helpful links right down the bottom there. There's a few really choice websites, and I'll put a link for that one there. So I hope this is kind of giving you a bit of an idea of who the protectors are, why we need protectors. And so the example also that Geshe Zopra's given and Alex Berzin gave is that first, they're not the worldly protectors. They're kind of way, way, way down the end of the entourage. The main protectors are manifestations of our guru, of enlightenment. And so those ones we can put in the merit field. Then there are the lesser protectors. But the way that we relate to the protectors is as if they're like our guardians. So many times the Tibetans will talk about how you might have seen those huge Tibetan mastiffs, those massive dogs. You know, their heads are three times as big as a human head. They're really enormous, big, black, strong dogs, and they're real killers. So they're guard dogs. And so you have guard dogs to guard, you know, your home and your family so that you can be freed up to do the more important work. And with guard dogs, you have to be really strong to be able to hold their energy, to have them respect you. You can't be kind of meek, but at the same time, you have to be kind to the guard dogs, because we know what happens when you have brutalized guard dogs. They just don't go crazy, don't they? And they just kill everybody. So there's something else too that Alex Berzin said about this. Tsergkong Rinpoche, one of the teachers of His Holiness the Dalai Lama, explained that having a protector is like having a very strong and vicious dog. If you're a strong person, you can go and sit and guard your gate every night to make sure that thieves don't attack, but usually people wouldn't do that. It's not that they don't have the ability, it's just, why bother? You could put a dog there instead. So in Tibet, they have huge dogs that are very vicious and can kill people. So to command them, you have to be really strong, but you also need to be kind to the dog. You have to make sure that you always feed it. But if you don't feed such dogs every day and you aren't nice to them, or if you're weak, then the dog can attack and hurt you. It's similar with Dharma protectors in that you don't take them lightly. You make what is called a dumsig, or a bond with the protectors, whereby you feed them and they protect you. So it's a relationship in which they work for us and we are in control. Tsergkong Rinpoche always emphasized the importance of having command over the protectors, because we mustn't be afraid of them, but we do have to make offerings to the protectors every day so that we have, and so we have protector ceremonies. For instance, with the Mahakala practice, it's used only when we ourselves have taken on the form of a very strong and forceful Buddha figure, not a gentle one. So for instance, in the Gelug tradition, we do the protector practices in the context of generating ourselves as Yamantaka, the forceful aspect of wisdom, Manjushri. So this I found quite interesting, because then he goes on to say, we have so many things to do, so it's helpful to bring in some helpers, like employing a fierce dog to guard the gate of our home. We don't call in a gentle dog like one of those poodles with nail polish, which is like this dog. We ourselves also need to be extremely strong. We have to be kind to the dog and feed it. And so we have pujas in which we make offerings to the protectors. So what do we feed the protectors? What we feed the protectors is our delusions, our neuroses, our doubts, our procrastination. So to do that, we have to be really honest, don't we? We have to be courageous and be very authentic in our practice, so that if we have problems, we feed them to the protectors. And if we are authentic, then it's like the protectors deal with those problems and we can kind of relax a little bit. But as you know, most of the time when we're really stuffing up in life, we just go into denial, don't we? Or we justify ourselves, get really defensive. Now, that's like a red rag to the protectors. That's like, you know, if we're not honest or authentic, that's going to come back and backfire at us. So just like I found every year, if I actually do a retreat every year, then the rest of the year is fine. But if I miss out on my retreat for the year, then the rest of the year is like a continuous difficulty. So again, it's like if we have that real courage, we go through this internal process, and part of it is becoming really authentic and looking at the real enemy, self-cherishing and self-grasping, and then accepting help and protection from the whole, all of the aspects of Buddha Dharma. So how do we propitiate the protectors? How do we feed them? We give them our fears. We give them our worries, our desires, everything, by being really honest. It's then another way that Geshe Zopa explained it was, it's like, you know, when we've got bouncers in a nightclub or guards, you know, you want to keep them sweet, don't you? You want to take out some treats to them every night. You don't necessarily invite all the bouncers in. They have their spot. You want to make sure everything's in order, and then they can do their job. So there are, let's see. I'll show you another picture now. So we've had Mahakala, the great black one. Wrathful compassion. So, you know, it's like when someone's really stuffing up, you can't nicely go, "Oh, darling, I wish you wouldn't do that." You have to go, "Hey, how can you do this to yourself?" And save them with force. So the force looks terrifying to the self-grasping, to the pity me, but it is absolutely liberating to be freed from. So now I'll tell you a story about when the protectors came in Bendigo. So here's a photo just on the edge of the great stupa there at Bendigo. You can see the sun kind of alighting the underneath the clouds. I'm not sure if any of you have seen the great stupa at Bendigo, but you know, the grounds that it's on is as big as a football oval. It's going to be the largest stupa in the Southern Hemisphere. So one night when in 2018, the last retreat that was there, these clouds like that came from one direction, kind of from a very small point on the horizon upwards and over the stupa. Lots and lots and lots of clouds. It was just the most amazing cloud formation lit like that underneath, kind of gray on the top and pink underneath. And apparently I haven't been able to find the name of this type of cloud, but it what it portends is very strong winds are coming. So the rest of the sky was clear. It's just this clouds coming straight over the top of the stupa. Anyway, so that night in the stupa, it started getting really, really, really windy, and the clouds started, you know, looking a little bit like this, but more intense. And it started getting so windy that all of the construction equipment and the chains that were holding the doors closed, and all of the you know, the scaffolding around the top, because the stoop is still being built. So the wind's going woo, and the chains going clank, 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 and the doors boom, boom when the wind comes. And Lama Zopa Rinpoche says, "The protectors are coming." So the clouds ended up looking something like this. Really extraordinary. And Delma said afterwards, why did someone drive a semi-trailer around the stupa? It wasn't a semi-trailer, it was the wind. And this is who came, Paldun Lamo. Really fearsome in her windy maelstrom around and around and around the stupa. Oh my gosh, I'm just getting like goose pimples thinking about it. So Lama Zopa Rinpoche continued the teaching with the protectors and everything. And then he said, you know, we did protector prayers. My friend Pearly, in the middle of all of this, was busting to go to the loo. So she went out. She could barely get the door open, and then she could barely get the door closed right at the back of the stupa there to go outside. She was going to the loo. She's like bent over to try to not fall over. And she's thinking, well, if I die, at least I die in Bendigo at the great stupa with Rinpoche. What better place to die than with Lama Zopa Rinpoche? Took her own life into her hands, managed to go to the loo and come back again unscathed, her hair all over the place when she came back. Anyway, so I got really quite scared, because when the wind is so incredibly strong and it hits on you like that, even when you're inside, in your mind, it mirrors, you know, it brings up a whole lot of what's going on. So then at the end of the teaching, Rinpoche said, you know, there's a lot more to tell you, but if I told you, you'd probably go crazy. He just left it at that. So let me tell you about the story of Paldun Lamo. So according to a Tibetan myth, Paldun Lamo was married to an evil-doing king of Lanka who habitually murdered his subjects and was known to be an enemy of the Dharma. And she vowed either to reform her husband or see to it that his dynasty ended. And over many years, she tried to reform her husband, but her efforts had no effect. And further, her son was being raised to be the ultimate destroyer of Buddhism. So she decided she had no choice but to end the dynasty. And one day, while the king was away, she killed her son, skinned him, and drank his blood, using his skull for a cup, and ate his flesh. And she rode away on a horse saddled with her son's flayed skin. This is a gruesome story, but do remember it's a myth, and there are many ways to interpret it. It can be seen as an act of contrition. She took the child of her body back into her body, taking ownership in a sense of what she'd created. The flayed skin saddle represents the karma of what she'd done that she was still riding. When the king realized what had happened and he returned, he screamed a curse and seized his bow and arrow and struck Paldun Lamo's horse, or it's actually a mule, with a poison arrow. But the queen healed the horse, saying, "May this wound become an eye to watch the 24 regions, and may I be the one to end the lineage of the malignant kings." So what we have with the eye, where the arrow struck, see on the horse there, that's where the king's arrow struck, and there's an eye in the rump of the mule. So right there is this amazing wrathful story of how we transform pain and suffering into the path to enlightenment, where a wound can become an all-seeing eye of compassion to protect others. So this kind of leads me to the end part of our teaching of how Our Dharma lessons in life aren't necessarily always peaceful. Sometimes they're really wrathful. Sometimes the experience can be like this. But often a wrathful teaching becomes unforgettable. So often they talk about the four means of taming sentient beings, or the four means of drawing students. So you have peace, increase, power, and wrath. And this is kind of like, you know, when we say our mala, or we put our mala over our fingers, that's why we put it over this top finger, because it's usually peaceful means. So we pull the beads over the top of our finger. The ways of drawing students is by peaceful means. So an example of this would say be white Tara practice. It's when you get blissed out at teachings, you feel so happy, your mind's pacified, you feel like you're coming home. So that's the usual way of drawing sentient beings, how the lamas teach us, how we experience the Dharma. Then the second one, increase. So that's like orange manjushri, increasing our wisdom and our memory, yellow zambala, increasing our wealth, our spiritual resources. And many times the way that the lamas draw us in with increasing means is by giving us a present, or inviting the volunteers to dinner. And we just feel so special, and it just lifts our spirits so much, you know, just to get this a little mala, or you know, sometimes when the lamas come and then they give everybody a blessing cord or a picture of the Buddha, something like that. So increasing means. Well, they give us a really fun task to do. So one time Lama Zorupa Mishe, when he was coming, rang up and said, "Now, Miffy, have you done your hair?" And I was like, "Yeah, I have to put new dye in it." And he said, "What I'd like you to do is do it all up with have the eight offering goddesses coming out the top, have it all wrapped up in a kata, have the five wisdom colour the six perfections and the five wisdoms." And I just went, "Wow, how fantastic." And I just did this outrageous hairdo when Rinpoche came. So it's like increasing means. The third one, control or power, how the lamas use controlling means. So it's when we're really going a bit crazy. And that can be like when you're there in a teaching and you start getting ants in your pants, you know, you're really restless and you just want to go. And my friend Pearly said she was at a teaching like this, but she felt like she was like a little fly going zzz, and the lama just pinned her down effortlessly. So even though her mind was going all crazy, she couldn't move. She had to stay there. So Vajrayogini, Vajrapani, they're like the powerful, ability to control our going crazy mind. And the last one, wrath, terrifying means. So that's when we have really big obstacles, then we have really powerful protection. And many times we'll experience what is a wrathful teaching. And this is where we might go through a very traumatic event, say some violence or a really difficult event. And in that moment that it's happening, there's something in our mind that goes on, "I know they're harming me, but I don't want to harm them. I know it's not them. I know it's their delusions." And we have this incredibly clear realization that's totally different from a worldly one where we just normally retaliate back. Sometimes it can happen when we have a relationship breakup, or when our house burns down, where we end up in the emergency department in hospital and we have a Dharma thought, a Dharma response to it. And those events are just unforgettable, aren't they? So that's a wrathful teaching. We get the wisdom of the Dharma. It's like straight between the eyes, but it's in this incredibly intense, wrathful, almost traumatic way. So the few kind of wrathful teaching experiences that I've had in life are like that, absolutely unforgettable. So to make sure that we don't get overwhelmed by those wrathful teachings or wrathful experiences, or don't get overwhelmed by our inner demons, known nowadays in modern times as neuroses, depression, anxiety, social anxiety, procrastination, perfectionism, doubts, skepticism, being jaded, being cynical. They're those inner demons, and that's why we need the protectors. And if we do the protector practices, propitiate the protectors, go through this kind of external process like that, then we can be protected from those real inner fears. So I hope my meanderings through where the wild things are has made some sense to you. Let's dedicate the merits of this kind of so far one-sided conversation. And then I can open it up for your questions and comments. So let me just put it onto grid view. And what can I do? I can ask you all to start your video and I think how you can unmute yourself is you just push the space bar and it will unmute you. So does anyone have any questions or comments?
I've got to say, I haven't been, this is my first Dharma in pajamas.
And all right.
And so it's been a while since I have been to the center, of course, and like even it was last year. So, and I've been, yeah, anyway, I look at the start, when you started talking, I was like, oh, what is this? What on earth is this? But I've got to say, I had just so many things in there that I could relate to. And I really appreciate it. Yeah. I probably do have some questions, but right now I'm just thinking, oh my gosh, that was so fascinating and so useful.
Oh, I'm glad to hear. I'm glad to hear. I mean, you know, like it's been ages since many of us have physically been to the center.
Yeah.
And this whole experience of COVID in a way is like a wrathful teaching too, isn't it? Because, you know, on death and impermanence and the importance of cherishing others. But it's come in a wrathful way. It's kind of like a wrathful controlling teaching in ways of experiencing the Dharma like that. Yeah.
For sure.
So any question at all, Samantha? You know.
I feel like I feel a bit overwhelmed. I feel like I need to process. I was taking some notes because it's a lot. It's a lot for a first time back, but. I'm often surprised at how it's like when I would come to the center on a Thursday morning, I would go, I can't believe how relevant it was. It's like, it's always relevant. And this is really relevant for some things that are going on in my family at the moment. So I think I just need to process and maybe go back to, maybe do a little more reading. I'd be interested to look at that website that you mentioned.
Yeah, it's a great, Alexander Berzin, you know, he's one of the great Western teachers. And if there's anything that you're wondering about, any kind of aspect of Buddhism, that's a really good first port of call because you're going to get a very measured, authentic answer.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
That sounds good. Yeah. I need a refresher.
And what about you, Jeanette? How about you? Any questions or comments?
I don't have any questions, but yeah, definitely it was very relevant. I found myself getting upset about things that are really outside my control in the last week or so, and it's definitely given me something that I can use to help to let go of the attachment. It's very hard to let go of that attachment to outcomes.
Oh yeah, I think we all resonate with that.
Definitely. Yeah, well said.
And June, how about you? How are you?
I'm good. yeah, that's very helpful for me because I've always been frightened of the protectors. And, you know, not really understood what they were for, what they were for. And so, you know, I have seen some like statues of them and it's like, oh, I don't even want to go near them. But now I understand what they're for, that's made a big difference to me. And I realize there's so many of them. And so the many different ones, are they for different things or are they just?
Yes. So I was doing like a little bit of reading for preparation for this. So one of the things His Holiness the Dalai Lama said that there are about eight main protectors that are actually, you know, manifestations of the Buddhas. So they're enlightened. They are actually enlightened. And so there are different ones for the different scopes within Buddhism. So this is something I didn't know before. So Mahakala for the great scope, because Mahakala is the wrathful manifestation of great compassion. So of that bodhicitta wish to become enlightened for the benefit of all. So Mahakala is the protector for the great scope. And then Vaishravana, protector for the middle scope, because the middle scope is mostly to do with ethical behavior. And so Vaishravana, His Holiness the Dalai Lama says, really likes purity. And then a protector called Dharmaraja is the protector for the lower scope to do with renunciation. Now, do I have I can read it to you. It was really interesting. I haven't found it. Where was it? From the Dalai Lama. Oh, yeah. Okay. So the three scopes, Mahakala, Vaishravana, and Kalarupa, in the center of row, six arm Mahakala, wrathful aspect of Chenrezig, who protects practitioners of the highest scope. Vaishravana is appropriate for those who observe pure morality, particularly pleased with purity, as those of the middling scope are primarily concerned with ethical purity. Vaishravana is the appropriate protector for them. And those of the lowest scope are primarily concerned with observing the law of cause and effect, karma. And Dharmaraja is the witness of wholesome and unwholesome actions, and so he's their protector. So then they're the protectors. So they're ones there. You don't go to them for refuge. You have them as the guard dogs, the protectors. But the other thing that I didn't realize until I did the research for today was that to be able to do protector practices, you yourself need to have the initiation into a strong, powerful deity like Yamantaka or Haruka or Hayagriva. So it's having the strength to control those guard dogs. You can't be kind of meek and mild because those guard dogs are going to go nutso. So you need to have that really strong Dharma presence to be able to control or propitiate those protectors. So then if you haven't had those initiations, that's okay, because when say we do protective prayers at Lungri Tampa Centre, as long as the person leading the prayers has them, then everybody else can come along. It's just like, as long as the person, the boss of the household, has can control the guard dogs, then you can have as many visitors as you like. Oh, God. So that's with the protectors, but don't get mixed up with the wrathful deities like Yamantaka or Haruka. Because those deities or higher griva, the initiation that Lama Zopa Rinpoche gave at Chenrezig Institute, in 2018, they are the highest yoga tantra wrathful emanations of the Buddha. So, you know, like those four activities, peace, increase, power, wrath.
Mm-hmm.
So the wrathful ones, they look scary because it's where you need ultimate power to be able to tame sentient beings.
Okay.
But I hope, June, that you got that idea of the deliciousness of it.
Yes. I'll look at it in a different way now. Not be so frightened.
Yeah, for sure.
And Manjushri, where does that one fit in?
So Manjushri, the Buddha of wisdom, and there are peaceful aspects of Manjushri and wrathful ones. Ah. So there's white Manjushri, which is the white Manjushri has like the cooling moonbeams. So that's a practice of peace. So it's a peaceful way of just kind of relaxing and revealing your wisdom, increasing your wisdom that way in the peaceful means. Then orange Manjushri, sometimes called yellow Manjushri, with the flaming sword, in a beautiful aspect of a 16-year-old youth, golden orange like the sun. So that's the increasing wisdom. But the highest yoga tantra aspect of Manjushri is Yamantaka.
Oh.
You know, fearsome. Mm. So there's all different kind of aspects like that. Yeah. The whole, just like human beings, you know, we have whole different psychological aspects. So everything's harnessed on the path to enlightenment for the benefit of others. And of course, then what keeps us nice are the vows. So when you take an initiation, then you have vows to keep. So it's just like, you know, when you get married, you have marriage vows, and that helps you keep the marriage pure. So when you have an initiation, you have the tantric vows, the bodhisattva vows, the refuge vows. And they keep you in line, or keep you safe to do that practice and not kind of go off crazy.
Good.
Okay.
And Susan, how are you?
Hello, I'm very well, thank you, Miffy. And wonderful experience for me, because as you know, I'm only very, very new to Buddhism, and I haven't encountered protectors before, so now at least when I do, I'll know that that they are not out to get me.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and I mean, this is too why you won't, like in a Buddhist center, you won't necessarily see any images of the protectors, because when you first come in, you just kind of go, whoa, until it's explained.
Yes.
So sometimes, like in the, if you go to the Vietnamese centers, you might see there's like two Dharma protectors at the door. They look quite fierce guards. So that's their function.
Okay.
There are the kings of the four directions. So they're at either side of the door when you go into like the Vietnamese temples or the Chinese, the Chan temples. So they are Dharma protectors, but they're not Buddhas. So they're not in the merit field. They're kind of there on the outside, but they've been bound to the Dharma.
Yeah, understand.
Yeah. So you'd be very nice to them, But you know they're on your side.
Okay. Good.
It certainly makes the looking at those artworks very fascinating. Just there's so much going in there. I felt like I was like, oh yeah, sure, there's a picture of a horse and a, you know, and then when I was coming into the screen going, oh my goodness, look at the detail.
There's so much in there.
The story, the fable being captured in that.
It's quite amazing. This, like at the top there, can you see there's like an umbrella?
Yes.
At the very, does that show up on the picture?
Just, I think, yeah. Oh. I think I'm looking at the right thing.
Yes, I can see it now.
This is an umbrella with the peacock feathers. So,
yes.
Yeah, whenever you see an umbrella, that's the protection of the Dharma. Because it's like we can't stop the rain of misfortune, we can't stop the hail and the storms and the whatever, but if we have an umbrella, we can go anywhere.
Oh, love that.
And we're always protected. So the umbrella is like the protection of the Dharma, mind protection, that whatever's going to happen to us, if we have the Dharma, we'll be safe. So right at the top there, and then it's got the peacock feathers. So peacocks are these birds that, you know, they're quite dangerous birds, but they can eat snakes and they don't get poisoned. So often with Palden Lamo, she has this emblem of the peacock feathers because it shows that she can deal with the poisons and the poisons don't harm her. So there's a huge amount of
symbolism
in there. And many, many layers of it as well. So in any tantric art, there's the literal meaning, there's the symbolic meaning, there's the lower tantra meaning, the highest yoga tantra meaning, there's up to 32 levels of meaning for one symbol.
Wow.
Wow. So at minimum, there's two, what we see and then the psychological meaning.
yes, incredible.
But also, Susan, going back to what you're saying too about with the protectors, you might find there has been a controversy about a certain protector in Tibetan Buddhism, and His Holiness the Dalai Lama has asked people to not do that protector practice, the Shugden practice. Mm-hmm. And that's because the Shugden protector is a worldly protector, not bound to the Dharma, not a Buddha. And so if we propitiate a worldly protector like that, we're going to have a worldly result within samsara. It's not going to be good for us. So that's why His Holiness has said to not do that practice. And so there's a lot of stuff online. And, of course, you know, because with gossip and whatever, you'll find a whole lot of stuff about this. You've got to be really quite careful of what you read. Mm. His Holiness really went out on a limb and did a whole lot of research and found that practice actually creates disharmony. Because it's a worldly god, not a Buddhist protector. And it kind of puts it into that context. I mean, what we have worldly protectors, you know, like we many of the nature spirits, for instance, might be worldly protectors. But also we look at the stock market as a worldly protector, the housing market as a worldly protector, all of those things. And so they're limited. You know, people used to say safe as houses, and it was safe as houses for ages. And then we had a bubble, and then we had, you know, not safe as houses. Houses are not safe. So it's not that the worldly protectors don't have power. I mean, money has an incredible amount of power over us, but as an ultimate refuge, it's no good. It just binds us deeper and deeper into problems. So that's why we have to be careful about which protectors we go for refuge to. And many like tribal societies and, you know, like black magic and all of that, it's had power. It's had power over people. Mm-hmm. No debating that. Mm-hmm. But what with Buddhism, you just go straight for what's the point here? To become a Buddha, to benefit all sentient beings. Mm-hmm. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So have any of you been to our protector prayers at Langri Tampa Centre?
No, never.
Because I mean, the thing about I mean, of course, as a child, I really loved them. But in you know, kind of daily life, we never really did protector prayers here for you know, years. And then in 2018, at the Bendigo retreat with Lama Zopa Rinpoche, they did protector prayers every night.
Mm.
And with the drum in this huge stupa. So the stupa, the retreat was held inside the stupa, and it's four stories tall inside, like an atrium. It's an enormous space. It's like a Buddhist cathedral.
Mm.
And so the drum and the cymbals and it would go for like, you know, 20, 30 minutes. It became like this pulsing of the universe.
Mm.
And, you know, like when you all chant together and everybody's heart rates go into sync. So everybody's heart rate, everything went into sync with the drums. Mm. So it's this profoundly harmonizing experience.
Mm.
And really quite elemental in a way, as well as very invigorating. So you'd be so tired at the end of the day, and then this drum, you'd just, like your whole blood, everything would course through your body and you'd be re-energized again. Everything would just be cleared.
Mm.
Ready for the next day.
Yeah.
It was fantastic. So, yeah, the protector prayers, when we do them here, then we try and have the drum and the cymbals so that you get the same kind of effect.
Mm. Mm, cymbals.
What else? Anyone else got comments, questions?
Yeah, I do. So if I wanted to, I mean, there's so many protectors. Do I have to pick a protector?
No, luckily it's kind of picked for you. So we have, with the protector prayers, we've got a praise to Paldun Lamo,
okay,
praise to Mahakala, a praise to the whole kind of entourage and the various, you know, landlords around so that everything gets harmonious.
Okay.
So there's a set amount that we do. And so we do them on protector days so that one day a month is protector day, so we do prayers on that day.
Okay.
And at Langri Tama Centre, we do them on behalf of everybody.
Ah, thank you.
Then generally in retreat, or if you're doing a you know, everyday kind of retreat practice, or in a group retreat, you do protector prayers every night.
Okay.
And then that, you know, like in a retreat, everything gets really intense and sometimes people start getting quite squabbly with each other. You know, you're sitting there next to someone meditating for days on end and suddenly they become really annoying. So that's why you have protector prayers every night, to just disperse all that agitated energy. Just blast it out. So in retreats, there's usually protector prayers every night.
Right.
And then sometimes, like if you come and do Vajrasattva purification on Friday nights, just in the refuge prayer there, it just includes all the dharkas, dakinis and dharma protectors.
Mm.
So it's just kind of included in there.
Mm. Okay. Yeah.
So it all comes in good stead.
Yeah.
And I suppose then if you have a real connection with one, like if you have a dream, or you have an experience or a wrathful experience, then come and ask, you know, me or one of the nuns or something about that.
Yeah, okay, thank you. Yeah, thanks.
But generally at Langri Tampa Centre or at any Dharma Centre, The poojas are done on behalf of all the students.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Nithi.
Yeah. Oh, if you ever have any kind of, you know, just odd question that's been percolating around your mind, then please email me about it. And because it's quite relaxed which topics we end up doing each week. I never know from week to week. So anyway, it's always food for thought. And very nice to have you along. So thank you, everybody. Really lovely to see you all this morning. All the very best. Have a fruitful week, and don't forget to book your tickets for next week too.
I'll do. All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye, my ladies. Bye. Bye.